It's time for a Tennessee Titans 53-man roster projection following the off-season program, OTAs, and minicamp in the books. So who's going to make the team? Plus, Jeffrey Simmons signed a monster extension. We'll talk about that when we get to the defensive tackles. This is the Music City Audible. Let's get to it! Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graber, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing? Happy Monday.
I'm doing well. Happy Monday, as you said. With OTAs and minicamp officially in the books, we decided now is a good time to update our 53-man roster projection. It's been about 2 months since we last done one. We didn't even have the UDFA class when we last did one. Right. Titans have added some more veteran players since we last did one, so we've got some new additions there as well. I'm excited to get into this today. I think, you know, fans love a 53-man roster projection. You and I love doing them, and we've got an updated one for the Audible Army today.
And right off the bat, I will say that it was tough getting to 53, which it hasn't really been. In the past few years, Justin, we've had to be like, well, I guess this guy is going to make the team, even though he probably isn't good enough to be on an NFL roster. He's going to be on this roster. This year, I had like 54 to 55 players that I was like, I feel like they're going to keep all 54 or 55 of these guys. Yeah. But they're not. Obviously, they're not. They can only keep 53. So it's a little bit more difficult. And also, little tease for you guys. Justin and I are projecting somebody to make this 53-man roster who's currently a free agent, not even on an NFL team. But we think there could be a signing coming. So we took a stab at who that might be. So let's get right into it, starting with the offense here. This is our projected depth chart and 53-man roster on the offensive side of the ball. The red lines, if you're watching on YouTube, is the cutoff. Obviously, the top of each position is the starter, but we're talking about the 53-man roster here. So nothing has changed at the quarterback position since our April 28th version of this. Cam Ward makes the roster as a starter. Mitch Trubisky makes it as his backup. Will Levis, not on this team, whether cut or traded. And Hendon Hooker is, I think, proven to be just a camp body. I think they knew Mitch Trubisky was going to be taking some time away, so they went and signed Hendon Hooker. Mitch Trubisky finally shows up, and Hooker's not even getting team reps anymore. I think that he was there for many. I wonder if he's even still on the team when training camp rolls around. Maybe they want a fourth arm, but it's clear to me these are the two quarterbacks that are making the team, and the other two will be cut.
Yeah, you and I have remained steadfast in our belief that Will Levis will not be on this roster come September. And we're sticking to that for now. It's within the realm of possibility. I think we acknowledged that last week, right? Like, they continue to say good things about Will Levis. He was up and down in OTAs and minicamp, but seemed to finish strong, seemed to get better as that went forward. But I think it's going to be two. Cam Ward and Mitch Trubisky, they signed Trubisky to be the backup. No reason to believe that they're going to have a third or fourth. And regarding Hendon Hooker, I don't mean to sound mean, but I don't know that I read a good thing about Hendon Hooker at OTAs or minicamp. Like, just not an NFL caliber quarterback. I think that's been proven over the last several seasons.
Well, and careful, I do think they'll keep four arms. Careful. You're going to alienate a huge portion of the Audible Army, the Vols fans.
Listen, he's not an NFL caliber quarterback. I do think he'll be there for camp. I think they'll want to keep four arms for camp. And I think keeping him also gives them flexibility if they get a decent Levis offer in the middle of camp. But we're sticking with the two. It's Ward and Trubisky.
Yeah, and at running back, nothing has changed here, at least for us, since our April 28th projection. We got Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears making the team, Kalel Mullings for special teams purposes, and the rookie Nick Singleton, which means Michael Carter and Julius Chestnut will be, in our projection, will be cut. Blake Watson, no longer on the roster, was part of this exercise the last time we did it, but he's gone. So he's already been cut.
We kept this projection the same, as you said, but I think we acknowledge that there's competition here. Like, I don't think Kalel Mullings is assured anything. We went with him because, as you mentioned, background on special teams, former linebacker at Michigan. But Julius Chestnut also plays special teams. You know, if he runs the ball better than him in camp in the preseason, he's a preseason star. He might just do that. There's competition there. And same with Michael Carter, who obviously, you know, knows Robert Saleh from his time with the Jets. So there's some wiggle room here. We're giving Mullings the upper hand, if you will, due to the special teams upside. But, you know, not as confident in this as we are probably at quarterback, let's admit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Michael Carter is the fourth running back here instead of Mullings because of coach familiarity with Saleh. And I understand what Carter has been the last few years, a practice squad guy who gets called up when the entire room is decimated. But Robert Saleh has shown you how much his connections to former players matter with all the free agents they brought in this offseason, most of whom are making the roster for sure. Many of them starting players or at least high in the rotation. So that's the only dark horse reasoning that I have for Michael Carter. But I think it's going to come down to who can provide the most value on special teams, because that fourth running back's not going to see the field on offense.
And I'll admit that I don't know this for sure, but I don't remember him being like a great gunner. You know what I mean? Like, he's small, he's undersized. Yeah. He really going to get down there and make a bunch of special teams tackles the way Mullings and Chestnut probably can? That's the big hangup for Michael Carter with me.
Yeah. All right. That's the easy positions there, I think. Well, running back is questionable, but hasn't changed. Wide receiver, this position, at least our projection for this position, also has not changed, but the competition is different. The players in the back end have been churned. We got multiple UDFA rookie wide receivers in Tyron Montgomery and Hank Beatty. And, you know, Robert Saleh said this was going to be one of the most competitive battles was for these back end receiver spots. That said, we didn't change our projection. We still have Calvin Ridley, Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, along with Shimmer ADK, Alec Iamanner, and Bryce Oliver. I think those top five guys are stone cold locks to make the team. I think they probably keep six because that's pretty standard in the NFL. I could see a world where they keep five and just put the rest of the guys on the practice squad. Robert Saleh even said that because he was asked last week, like, how do you determine the rotation of the wide receivers and who gets reps when? And he was like, well, first of all, the guys who aren't starting have to prove that they deserve reps. So, like, there's a world with an increased defensive line group that they only keep five. I still think they will keep six, especially because of special teams purposes. Everybody's favorite UDFA, Tyron Montgomery. We have not on the team, but I would say probably a practice squad candidate. And it's, you know, it's between him and Xavier Restrepo and Hank Beatty, maybe, and Bryce Oliver, I think, for that last spot. And KJ Osborne, I should say.
Yeah, I think we landed on six, and I agree with that, because the hang up for me with the keep five scenario is none of them are like great special teams, you know, defenders, if you will. Obviously, Shimmer ADK is an all-pro returner, but not a great, you know, special teams gunner, tackler, whatever you want to call it. So that's why we land on six. Obviously, Bryce Oliver has been very good for them in that area. But as you noted, more competition for that, you know, presumed sixth and final spot than first indicated. I think KJ Osborne had a big offseason workout program, hopefully carries that over. Xavier Restrepo was really good as well. Hank Beatty, an underrated UDFA. It's funny. You mentioned Tyron Montgomery. When I think practice squad guys, I'm thinking Restrepo and Beatty and maybe Osborne before I even get to Montgomery. But love that they're going to have some competition at this spot. It's a first world problem, one they haven't really had in a number of years.
Yeah, no kidding. So that means that we have KJ Osborne, Lance McCutcheon, Tyron Montgomery, Hank Beatty, Xavier Restrepo, Mason Kinsey, and Courtney Jackson as the full group of guys who will not be making the team, according to us.
Lance McCutcheon, right?
Yeah. Yep. And at tight end, moving right along here, tight end, we still have the same four tight ends making the team that we had back in April. Daniel Bellinger and Gunnar Helm, both listed as starters here. We're kind of fudging the numbers a bit, Justin, because we have three wide receivers listed as starters and two tight ends listed as starters. Like, they can only have either two tight ends or two wide receivers, but that doesn't matter. Daniel Bellinger and Gunnar Helm, both listed as the starting tight ends here. Jaron Kanick, the rookie, and Kylan Granson making the team with David Martin Robinson and Joel Wilson cut from this group. Now, here's what I'll say. I don't know that there's any... I think that Daniel Bellinger and Gunnar Helm are locks, and that the rest of this room is completely an open competition We put Kanek on because he's a rookie that they just drafted, and those guys usually make the team, but not always, especially not in the seventh round or sixth round. Kylan Granson, they signed as a free agent, so we feel like they maybe see a role for him, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to make the roster. David Martin Robinson could impress. Joe Wilson, I don't really think Joe Wilson has a chance, but hey, maybe he will. And the last thing I'll say about this position, Justin, is I am not confident they will keep four tight ends. You and I were debating how to, because we have 26 total players on offense. We'll get to the O-line next. I wanted to keep a different position group, one more player at a different position group. And I kind of threw the question out to you, like, are we sure they're going to keep four running backs and four tight ends? But you had a response for that.
Yeah, Graver and I went back and forth in this, back and forth on this, excuse me. And with the expanded usage of tight ends around the league and Brian Daboll using a lot more 12 personnel in his history than the Titans did last year. Titans were almost like last in the league, I think, in 12 personnel usage last season. With that planning to expand under Daboll and just the trend around tight ends in the NFL right now, I think they're going to keep four. I also think that you got to take into account Jaron Kannock, the rookie tight end, Jaron Kannock, excuse me. I've heard whispers might be a really, really good special teams player. Remember, he played linebacker at Oklahoma before making the switch to tight end. So that also, you know, you take that into account. And if they are going to keep him, you almost have to keep four. Because if you're going to run 12 personnel, I doubt you're going to trust him a lot, you know, to kind of back up Bellinger and Helm. So you would need another veteran in that room, hence someone like Kylan Granson or a David Martin Robinson. Quick note on Joel Wilson that you weren't expecting. it was Anna's birthday on yesterday, my partner. Birthday. And the Titans tweeted out, like, happy birthday. I got a notification and I was with her, obviously. I'm like, Anna, who do you share a birthday with on the Titans? And it was Joel Wilson. They tweeted out, happy birthday, Joel Wilson. I'm like, wow, that sucks. I thought you were going to share a birthday with someone cool. But no, it's just Joel Wilson. You're still the best person in my life who's got a birthday today. It would have gotten dicey there for her if it was like Jeffrey Simmons or Cam Ward. But luckily for her, it was just Joel Wilson.
Yeah. All right. That is the first half of the offense. We got an offensive line group to talk through right after our first break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, everyone. Continuing now with the offensive line. Now, this group has been shaken up since we last did this projection. Obviously, every group was shaken up with UDFAs, but this one probably the most with free agent signings, with things that we know now that we didn't know then. So we have, at the starting five hasn't changed since we projected this last time. Dan Moore, Peter Skoronski, Austin Schlotman, Jackson Slater, J.C. Latham. That's your starters from left to right. As we project them, obviously there is a competition going on at right guard, and we could see a world where Cordell Volson wins this job, at least to start the year, because of experience and, you know, potential knowledge of the system. Although he hasn't played in the system, just veteran experience over Jackson Slater, who's played all of, what, 38 snaps in his career. And backing up each spot, backing up the left guard, we got Fernando Carmona. Backing up the center spot, we have Pat Coogan. Backing up the right tackle spot, we have Austin Deculus. We actually projected Andre James to get cut, along with Drew Moss, Garrett Dellinger, Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon, Ryan Hayes, Emil Wagner, who has a shot to come in and win a swing tackle job maybe, and Rasheed Miller, who we are listing at right guard on the authority of Teron Davenport. Although Miller is technically listed as a tackle on the Tennessee Titans official roster right now, we are going off that report that he's a guard, but it doesn't matter because we haven't been cut. And finally, Justin, projected to make this team at backup tackle, swing tackle, a player who is not currently on an NFL roster. Now, we kind of just picked a name out of the hat. You know, we just looked at the available offensive tackles and picked one. But we went with Cornelius Lucas making this roster as the swing tackle because, well, while we may not know exactly which name it will be, we are projecting the Titans will sign another tackle either before or during training camp to beef up the depth at that spot.
Yeah, we had some fun here, and Graver and I actually had a few debates about this group, and that was off air, obviously, but we had fun with it. I do think we're in agreement they need a veteran swing tackle. It wasn't good at OTAs or minicamp when, you know, J.C. Latham was missing time or whatever, gave up a couple sacks, false starts, you know, Cam Ward was under pressure. They got to do something to get better there. Cornelius Lucas is a name that makes sense to me. I know you said we picked one out of a hat, but in my mind, and it's probably stupid of me to say this, but like, he strikes me as a guy that's like a swing tackle at this stage in his career. I thought there was at least some rhyme or reason to going with him over like a Jonah Williams or whatever. But some of the debates Graver and I had at this position group in general, like, full disclosure, I'll throw Graver under the bus. He thought I was crazy for wanting to cut Andre James.
I still do.
That's fine. We can talk about it. Let's fight about it. I don't think I'm crazy for wanting to cut Andre James. I think Graver's remembering the Andre James of old. I feel like Graver's dad right now, where like we're at the store and he's trying to pick up Andre James off the shelf. And I'm like, we have Andre James at home, you idiot. We don't need Andre James. You've got that toy at home. I just feel like, you know, a guy available in June, vet minimum for the Chargers last year, did nothing of note. They drafted a center in Pat Coogan. You made a good argument. I'm obviously kidding with all the crap I'm giving. You made a good argument. Like, if Austin Schlotman were to get hurt, you know, Andre James is a veteran, you might trust more. But I'm like, I feel like you can get that kind of guy on the practice squad. Worst case scenario, if Schlotman were to get hurt. And one thing I didn't mention to you that I'd also push back on, like, worst case scenario that does happen. I know you don't love moving guys around, but like, they see Jackson Slater as capable of playing center. Maybe I just move Jackson Slater to center and play Cordell Volson at right guard if Schlotman were to get hurt. So it's like, I didn't see the need for Andre James, and Graver's so nice, I guess he conceded to me here.
Here's where we eventually ended up, is like, they probably don't keep four running backs, four tight ends, and 11 offensive linemen, which is how I originally had this projected, and it was like, we got too many guys on this team. Of course, the 11th offensive lineman we're projecting isn't even on the roster right now, but that doesn't matter because we do think they're going to sign a tackle. I think that Andre James has a real shot, obviously, to make the roster. They just signed him, and you say, like, oh, a veteran available in June as, like, a derogatory thing. Well, Kevin Zeitler is available in June. If they signed him right now, you'd be projecting him in the starting lineup.
Right? Like, this guy was on a vet minimum deal last year.
But we don't know what Andre James signed for this year, and he's reuniting with an old position coach that he didn't have with the Chargers. I could see a world where he makes it and Pat Coogan doesn't, honestly.
What?
And not because I don't like Pat Coogan, but he's a sixth round pick. Sixth round picks have no guarantee of making the roster. Obviously, if they don't keep him on the 53, it's with the intent to get him on the practice squad. And you can make the same argument for Andre James as well, except that if you're on the practice squad, unless you're in a random game day elevation, which you only get two or three of those per season, if Austin Schlotman goes down mid-game...
I think you get four.
Four per season? Okay.
Yeah, four.
If Austin Schlotman goes down middle... What?
Four practice squad elevations.
Throughout the year before you have to be put on the roster or not elevated again. Anyway, if Austin Schlotman goes down mid-game, you're going to shuffle the whole offensive line. You're going to put a backup in. You're going to put somebody who hasn't played much center, who's never played a snap at center in the NFL in their life, at center, just hoping that he can hold it down. Or you're going to, because Pat Coogan's the one on the active roster, you're going to throw a sixth round rookie in to play center. I think that you are opening yourself up to a world of hurt if Austin Schlotman, even if he only has to miss a series, like having an Andre James out there makes a lot more sense to me. And then Pat Coogan can be your practice squad guy. And if somebody gets placed on IR or whatever, then you bring Pat Coogan onto the active roster. Or maybe like after the bye week, you're like, hey, Pat Coogan's really he's understanding the offense now. He's the guy that we want on the active roster on game day for whatever reason. I think Andre James could also get cut for all the reasons you're saying, but I think it's equally likely that he makes the team and Kylan Granson doesn't make the team, and they just use practice squad elevations to make sure they have four tight ends up, and then, you know, eventually somebody's going to get hurt,
right? Like, they could elevate Andre James four times or whatever and figure out the number. No, guys go on IR, things change, right?
Right.
I love the debate we had at this position. I'll also say I would have gone Crenshaw Dixon over Deculus. So I think a lot of debate here on the offense. Yeah, I think so.
He was one of their earliest free agent signings. They obviously liked him for some reason.
I mean, I guess he stinks. And it seemed like, keep in mind, it seemed like Crenshaw Dixon was the one getting the first team reps at right tackle when Latham wasn't there. So.
Well, they were rotating those guys a lot. Ryan Hayes was getting first team reps at tackle as well, and he's not going to make the team for sure. So, and Crenshaw Dixon wasn't good in OT. I mean, granted, no pads, it's hard to judge, but like,
we made a whole rap song about how bad Austin Deculus was last year.
No, I made one line in a rap song about his unit that he was a member, one of five, of being bad. And Crenshaw Dixon gave up a sack and then false started on consecutive plays on the last day of minicamp. So, like, that is not a great last image to leave into the summer, but
you heard it here, folks. Graver is team Andre James and Austin Deculus. I'm team Pat Coogan and Brandon Crenshaw Dixon. We'll see what happens. Loser has to get a full size tattoo of one of them on their back, is probably what we're not gonna do, but is a fun suggestion to imagine nonetheless.
I will say, I don't think Pat Coogan gets cut. I'm just saying, it's not out of the question that they decide to keep James over Coogan. I am team Pat Coogan as well, but I'm definitely team Andre James making the roster. Like, we settled it this way because it's like, if he doesn't make the roster, he's on the practice squad, or somebody else is on, somebody that we have on the roster from this grouping, if Andre James makes it, will still be a member of the 2026 Tennessee Titans, right? Whether it's practice squad or active roster.
Graver chickened out when he found out he might have to get a Pat Coogan life-size tattoo on his back.
This is not real. This is not real.
Moving on to the D-line.
Play back what I just said. I didn't say that I think Pat Coogan gets cut. But yes, we will move on to the defensive side of the ball now. Starting with the defensive line, the defensive ends first, and then we'll hit the tackles because we got a pretty big news item to hit on the tackles. But defensive ends, Jermaine Johnson, of course, along with Keldrick Falk backing him up, which we changed because originally on the April 28 projection, we had Keldrick Falk as the starter opposite Jermaine Johnson. I moved him to the backup spot here because we've gotten a lot of reports that Jacob Martin is starting on the other side. Now, we don't know exactly for sure who's going to be the first guy on the field week one at each end spot, but we know they're going to rotate a lot, so it kind of doesn't matter. The other ends we have making the roster, Femi Oladejo. Hopefully he gets back healthy here for training camp. And Jalen Harrell, although Jalen Harrell, no lock to make the roster. Just a guy who showed a lot, I think, towards the end of last year and has a chance. Which means Malik Herring, Truman Jones, David Abuka-Agoha, their 53-man or their 90-man roster exemption for the International Pathway Player Program, and Ernest Brown, we have not making the team.
Yeah, I think this is fairly straightforward. Like, Jalen Harrell's the big question mark, but the way they want to rotate linemen, I think it makes sense to keep as many as we did. Hopefully Femi's healthy. Like, is there a world out there where he starts on the pup or something like that? I hope not. But I'm not going to totally rule it out. Obviously, we're expecting, you know, if he is healthy, like, you know, Oladejo, you know, Johnson, Falk, and Martin will get the majority of reps here. But I don't think there's a whole lot of competition here. I guess, you know, injury notwithstanding.
Yeah. Nate Lynn and Ali Gay were part of this group. The last time we did this projection, those guys have been cut. So we are not talking about them. Moving on to defensive tackle. Actually, Justin, let's take a quick break and then our last break, and then we'll hit defensive tackle. Welcome back. All right, let's finish this episode out here. Defensive tackles we project to make the team. Obviously, John Franklin Myers and Jeffrey Simmons, along with Jordan Elliott and Solomon Thomas, plus the rookie draft pick Jackie Marshall. We do not have the recently signed Jalen Holmes on the team, nor do we have Timmy Horn or Cam Horsley. All of them would probably be practice squad candidates, but I think those five make sense at the defensive tackle spot. Five's a little heavy for DT, but this is a group that's going to be rotating quite a bit, as we've said many times. So we got 10 total defensive linemen making this roster. I think that's probably about where it'll be.
I think 10 is Robert Saleh's magic number. No debate here. I mean, if we're talking Coogan and Canuck, I think Jackie Marshall is up there too for debate, right? In terms of maybe not being a lock, especially when they bring, you know, if Jalen Holmes has a lot of NFL experience, maybe he's a veteran that pushes for that spot. But Jeffrey Simmons, over the weekend, 3-year, $105.8 million extension, $100 million in guarantees. He had 2 years remaining on his existing deal. So what? This keeps him under contract through 2030. Massive commitment to the face of the franchise. When the extension kicks in, so just the 3 years of the deal, he'll be making $35 million per year. That makes him the highest paid defensive tackle in NFL history. You took a little issue with this because he's got the 2 years left on the deal. So when you actually average out the duration of the 5 years that he's now under contract, significantly less than $35 million. But I think they typically measure these things in the extension terms, if you will. And when you just look at the 3 years they added is when you get to the $35 million per year number.
Yeah, and if you look at it as a five-year deal, which it really is now because he's under contract for the next 5 years, the total money that he's making puts him at $31.7 million per year over those 5 years. Now, obviously, the cap hits won't reflect that. The cap hits probably remain unchanged for these next 2 years, and then the bigger, higher salary will kick in as the cap goes up, by the way, and right before you have to pay Cam Ward. Hopefully, you have to pay Cam Ward. $31.7 million per year is literally the amount of money that Chris Jones is making as the previous highest-paid defensive tackle in the league. I think that they added these 3 years at the value that they did. A pretty random, weird number. 105.8 million. Why 0.8 million, right? Well, hey, if you average out across 5 years, it's the same average annual value that Chris Jones is currently making. So it's like we're making you the highest paid defensive tackle. We're also average over 5 years, it's going to be right on par with the current guy. But once the 3-year extension kicks in 2028, then you will be by far the highest paid defensive tackle, which probably takes into account guys like Jalen Carter and other defensive tackles who will sign between now and then.
Byron Murphy, the Seahawks.
Byron Murphy. Simmons will probably still be the highest paid defensive tackle, or maybe he won't, but it's going to be in the range of top three by the time that extension kicks in. So it'll still feel like he's getting paid as much as he deserves to be paid, but at least it's not like that jump, 31.7 is Chris Jones' average annual salary, previous highest paid defensive tackle in the league, to $35 million. That's like the Linderbaum jump, almost. Yeah. Not quite, but almost, in terms of like the highest paid center. That's a big jump for the top of the market. It's not like he beat him by, you know, from 31.7 to $32 million a year. Like, he went all the way to $35 million a year. I think that's because in 2 years, when we look at who the highest paid defensive tackles are now, the gap will be bridged between where Chris Jones is and where Simmons will be. But for now, over the next 5 years, 31.7, it's well-deserved. First team All-Pro last year for the first time. Albert Breer wrote in his Monday morning quarterback article this morning that he was one of the few almost unanimous responses when he was going around asking people who they put on their All-Pro ballot. Simmons, nearly unanimous first team All-Pro. Brian Baldinger over the weekend posted multiple breakdown videos calling Simmons the best defensive tackle in football last year, which he was. We talked about it last week that we think the ceiling for this upcoming season under Robert Saleh is even higher. And we also, Justin, we were a classic MCA episode airing finishes. Bang. Massive Titans news on a Friday. Didn't get a chance to talk about it until now. But it was expected. We thought this was coming. Yes. It did come. We thought maybe it wouldn't happen till July, but here we are celebrating the highest paid defensive tackle in NFL history. And one player the Titans can claim is the best at his position in all of football.
Definitely. Well deserved for Jeffrey Simmons. He might even retire as a Titan one day.
You hope so.
Things change in this league, but hopefully he retires as a Titan. He's a one franchise guy. I don't see a lot of those nowadays around the league, but best D tackle in football. Titans are lucky to have him, and they're thrilled to have him through 2030. Back to the 53-man roster projection. We're moving on to linebacker, where we've got, there have been some changes here. There's actually been one change, I believe.
One big change. One pretty big change.
We've got Cedric Gray. We've got Cody Barton, of course, a veteran. We've got Anthony Hill Jr., number 60 overall pick in the draft. We've got James Williams, who we had in April as well. We've always had. The one change that we've made is we are cutting, in this scenario, Mo Diabate, who they signed in free agency, and we're keeping Dorian Mousey, who was, I believe, a waiver claim last year when Titans had number one priority at the end of the preseason based on being the worst team in the league the year prior. They made four waiver claims. I think the rest of them are all gone, wasn't it? CJ Ravenel, Jalen Armour Davis. Who was the fourth? The fourth was I don't remember who the fourth was now.
Kyrie Elam.
No, definitely wasn't Kyrie. He came much later in the year. Yeah, escapes me now. But anyway, I think they made four. Dorian Mousey, I believe, is the only one who's still here. And you decided to make this change, and I'm fine with it, based on something you read from Easton Freeze.
Yeah, Easton Freeze wrote an article over the weekend, four underrated Titans to keep an eye on at training camp or something along those lines. And I'm just going to read straight from his article. Here's what I find telling. When you ask the Titans coaching staff about the linebacker room in an open-ended way, they keep lumping Mousey in with Anthony Hill, Cedric Gray, and Cody Barton. Robert Saleh has done it more than once. That's the top three in the room, and Mousey is the name they consciously or subconsciously throw into the mix fourth. His special teams resume would be his primary ticket to making the roster, but he's competing against guys like James Williams and a new draft pick at the position. The way he's been used at practice and talked about by coaches tells me he's someone worth monitoring. Now, Easton is not allowed to say what the pecking order, depth chart-wise, these guys are rotating in at, but he wouldn't write this article for no reason. So I think Easton is trying to tell us something without being able to tell us what he really wants to say, and I'm reading between the lines a bit on that. But the fact of the matter is, Bones Fossil was here last year. He's still here as the special teams coordinator. He had Mousey on his special teams unit last year. And if he goes to Robert Saleh and says, I don't care who your top linebackers are, but give me this guy for special teams, Robert Saleh is going to say, okay, I'll do that. So they may only keep four linebackers. And actually, I think A to Z has a 53-man roster projection out that has James Williams not making the team. I think that would be shocking, honestly. But it is a new staff, and new staffs like their guys sometimes. They did draft Anthony Hill Jr. Three of the UDFAs they brought in this offseason play linebacker, Shad Banks Jr., Manny Powell, and Sean Brown. I don't know if those guys will provide any real competition, but they also signed Diabate in free agency, so they bring in five linebackers this offseason to compete in this group. But we have Mousey making the roster because of special teams and because of what Easton wrote. That doesn't mean he will. Who knows? Maybe James Williams takes that special teams role. He was also very good on special teams last year. Like, he was a key special teamer, which is one reason I think they do keep five linebackers. But it's a big, I mean, we've kept a lot of linebackers and defensive linemen, which means we're not going to be keeping as many defensive backs as maybe we would have liked to. But that's where we're at. So.
James Williams had the second most snaps on special teams for the Titans last year, and Dorian Mousey was third, not far behind him, only 14 snaps away, 355 and 341 respectively. Oh, by the way, because I'm a nerd, the fourth waiver claim was Sam Womack, was the cornerback who did not last all that long last year. Speaking of Sam Womack, he played cornerback, so we're moving on to cornerbacks where we've got five, pretty standard. We know Cordell Flott and Alante Taylor are going to be the boundary starters. We actually haven't made any changes, right? I don't think to this group from the projection we did 2 months ago. We've got Joshua Williams as one of the backups outside. Micah Robinson, the other backup. And of course, Marcus Harris is the nickel. We did not have the UDFAs last time we did this, but we still don't have them making the roster. We've got Jaden Lucas, Latrell McCutcheon, and who's the third? I can't see that well. Jalen McMurray is the other UDFA. I think all those guys, Joshua Williams even, Michael Robinson, I think all those guys are competing for those spots. I think the UDFAs have a realistic chance. But as of now, Kedrain Callaghan, by the way, who's been praised a lot, was praised a lot throughout OTAs and minicamps, a very underrated member of this battle here. For now, we're going, Michael Robinson and Joshua Williams, but I do think this is probably a little closer than some fans think.
I think Callaghan has a chance. I think McMurray and Lucas and these other UDFA guys are competing for practice squad spots as like potential call-ups if somebody gets hurt.
Probably.
I don't think they have a real shot to make this roster unless they keep more corners than we're expecting, but we have them keeping five here. So that means we have them cutting four guys, the three UDFAs and Callaghan, and keeping the other five. Quick, all right, let's close this thing out.
Quick news nugget, oh, if you don't mind. Titans will rookies will report to training camp on July 23rd. I don't think we knew that. Adam Schefter just tweeted the whole list. Vanderbilt Health Football Center is obviously the new name of the facility. July 23rd for the rookies, July 28th for the veterans, which we know because Jeffrey Simmons kind of mentioned it. But the rookies will be there 5 days early on the 23rd at Vanderbilt Health Football Center.
Football Center. How about that for a new name? All right, Justin, let's close this thing out with the safety group. We did make a big change here, and this is the one and only undrafted free agent that we are projecting to make this roster. We got Imani Hooker and Kevin Winston Jr., obviously your starters. Tony Adams, the third safety, who's going to play a decent amount as your other strong safety, is going to be a box guy. And then we have Bishop Fitzgerald, the UDFA out of USC, making this roster. I don't know that he will, but he had a good, I think he had like a draftable profile as a prospect coming out. Didn't actually get drafted. Titans scoop him up. He's competing with Jarek Reed, Kendall Brooks, Eric Hallett, and Sanusi Kane. I think Kendall Brooks is his strongest competition. He flashed a little bit towards the end of last season, but I think the upside with a UDFA like Fitzgerald and a new coaching staff, although Tony Oden was, you know, DB's coach last year, so maybe that has some weight with Kendall Brooks and Jarek Reed. But yeah, we've got Bishop Fitzgerald making this roster, the only UDFA.
Yeah, we had to get a UDFA. Not we had to, but we wanted to get a UDFA on here. And I do think Fitzgerald, like five interceptions at USC last year, intriguing profile. The knock on him, why'd he go undrafted besides having five interceptions? Kind of struggled with open field tackling, doesn't take great angles, misses some tackles. So that's one of the big knocks on his prospect profile. And look, Jarek Reed and Kendall Brooks are really good and experienced special teams players. So that could play a role here too. But I think if you're going with the upside guy, and obviously more of an ascending talent, Bishop Fitzgerald, and maybe, and just maybe he can prove to play special teams as well. But some competition for that fourth and what we determined to be the final safety spot on the roster.
Yeah, and there's a chance that Fitzgerald is a practice squad guy who gets stashed there and maybe called up later, and they rely on somebody like Kendall Brooks earlier in the season, somebody that they trusted last year with a bigger role. And then, of course, the specialists. I didn't make a graphic for the specialists. Sorry, specialists. You are worthy.
People too.
You are worthy of a graphic. It's just like, it's hard to fit them onto the, these are so nice. Like, you've got, you know, 10 position groups listed out here. I don't want to screw that up just to throw in kicker Joey Sly, punter Tommy Townsend, long snapper Morgan Cox. We got 26 guys on offense, Justin. 24 on defense, and of course, 3 on special teams. That is the breakdown, and that's it. We did it. We projected the 53-man roster.
Had a lot of fun doing that. You guys love 53-man roster projections. I know for a fact that they've been doing really well as written content lately across digital platforms, so hopefully you guys love it on here as well. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more. I don't know for sure. Probably about the Tennessee Titans. We'll make a determination on what our topic is. Maybe we're going to do a fly fishing podcast. We don't know yet, but we'll see what happens. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.